is trying to convince these interrogators that she did not want to break up the marriage because there was children involved. She encouraged him to focus on fixing his marriage and being a good father. And then there's some people that have claimed that, oh, she's trying to be a martyr in all of this. Mm-hmm. She's trying to just make herself look at, like, the good person. Her activity the days of the murder, the day before the murder, on that very infamous date that they had at the Lazy Dog restaurant, where they were both was like, you know what, screw it, we're not hiding this anymore. And then Christopher pays for their meal on the joint statement family credit card or whatever. And that had the interrogators had the opportunity to question her without her dad present, and had they not shut down the interviews, oh, she would have cracked. She was starting to crack.
Whatever you might be going through and wherever you might be, this is Omar Serrato with the Tilted Lawyer Podcast. I'm here to take your mind off of things. Yes, I'm an attorney. No, I'm not giving you legal advice. We're going to sit and talk like people, as these are the candid thoughts of one practicing attorney, and it's after hours. So have a seat. Feel free to have a drink and join me. Let's get started.
Okay. So Nicole had suggested that she had said to Christopher, let's just take things slow. Let's keep our separate lives. You're just getting out of a marriage. You don't even know what it's like to be single and just worrying about yourself. Why don't we just take it slow? At some point, she admits to the interrogator that she made a mistake by getting involved with him before he was completely separated by his wife. Again, she's trying to be like the good person, whatever. Mother Teresa, Betty Crocker. She says that she encouraged him to take time to develop his own identity and embrace the beauty of being single, which I have no recollection of. I don't even remember what it was like to be single. I've been married for so long. I haven't been married that long. But it's like, like the thought of like the single life versus like what I have now. It's like, I can't, man. I got to get to bed. It's like 10 o'clock. I used to stay up to like 3 in the morning. And it would be like, I was just like such a night owl. But now I'm like a dad and I'm like, sleep is so precious. Like I cut that shit off like at 11. Like I can't. Like my wife goes to sleep before I do, but I'm usually in bed like by midnight, and that was never a thing. Like
that's late.
When
you texted last night, I was already out. Like, are we gonna record tomorrow? I'm like, I saw it this morning at 6 a.m. I'm like, oh.
I just assumed. Like, oh, I'm text her anyway. I'm up.
Yeah, I know. By 8:30, 9 p.m. I'm out. But it's the same thing. I mean,
in law school, I used to like operate off. Yeah. I mean, it was constant. I'm on always 2 hours, 3 hours of sleep. It was like the whole thing. I'll sleep when I'm dead. But you can't do that when you're older.
So, or have kids.
I got to get at least 4 or 5 hours, man. I got to get at least. Yeah, when you have kids, there's no sleeping in with children. There's none. There was none. I haven't slept in years. It's just a thing. But let us continue. Let's talk about how Nicole Kessinger was looking at wedding dresses.
Oh.
Ladies.
Where are we going?
Mom, I know that at one point you were probably infatuated with John Travolta because of Grease.
Oh, I love that movie.
Would you have been looking up wedding dresses for John Travolta? Or not John Travolta. Who was the other one? Who was the guy in Kirk Douglas's son? Michael Douglas?
Oh, back in the way. That's way back in
the day. Well, way back in the day. I know about Michael Douglas because of my dad. So I know that you had a crush on him.
It's so funny because I remember a girl, a friend in high school, and she had mentioned in regards to your dad, Omar looks exactly like Michael Douglas.
That's the story I'm thinking of.
Yes. And I'm like, I don't see the resemblance.
That's the story that I'm remembering. Yes. That's the story. Okay. Well, never mind. Okay. Whoever your high school crush was, yeah. At what point do you start researching wedding dresses? The pause really bothers
me. I would assume that you're going to research wedding dresses if you're proposed to, you're engaged, and you know that you're going to
when marriage forward. Is in consideration.
Correct.
Makes sense. Logical. Ileana?
I think I have to disagree there because I mean, me just liking fashion and just, I remember like not being with anybody and just Pinterest pops up.
Pinterest.
A wedding dress, and I just go into like a rabbit hole of just looking at different wedding dresses. Oh, this is pretty. Oh, this is pretty. And that probably will come up as a search for wedding dresses, but I wasn't really thinking about getting married at that point. It was just, I don't know. Wedding dresses are pretty.
Let me just push back on that a little bit. When I married my wife, obviously, but before we were married, oh, there were conversations that were had. I remember at one point, one of her friends had gotten married, and then I'm probably going out of bounds here. But we had this whole conversation. I just want to know what's wrong with me. Why you don't want to marry me? He's like, who said I didn't want to marry you? And then we had this whole discussion. And then it would be like Christmas. It was like, I just really thought that you were going to propose on Christmas. It's like, well, there's Valentine's Day. There's like New Year's. Who said it had to be on Christmas? And it was a thing for a long time. I hadn't proposed any of that stuff. I was trying to sell her on the idea of like, why do we got to get married? Marriage is just a business contract.
Okay, so we still got
Why don't we just like be boyfriend and girlfriend forever?
Well, that worked well for you.
I know, I'm all married and stuff.
I did come back with, well, for being, I mean, if something happens to you, I want to be able to make the decisions.
I can write a will.
Hospital. if we have children, I want them to have the same last name. Just first, like if something happens to you for the property and all that, so that I can be secure and all that, I convince him.
Oh, poor guy. Yeah. See, attorney me is like thinking of all these responses to what you just said.
Oh, yeah, but he's not an attorney, so.
He was disarmed. Yes. It's like, we could stipulate to whatever you want.
I know.
Why do we got to go through the whole dissolution, marriage petition? Oh. And then when I bring that up, I was like, why does all men think like that? I was like, yeah. Well, because, you know, historically, I don't want to get into that. That's a different show. Okay, so she's Googling wedding dresses. Not only was she doing that, she was Googling about marrying a mistress. Will a man leave his wife to marry a mistress? These were her Google searches. Despite claiming that she wanted to maintain like a casual relationship. Nobody's casual at anything. I could count on both hands how many times I've ever Googled wedding tuxedos. Zero.
You're a man.
I don't think I even Googled it when I was like getting married. Exactly. I think my brother was in charge of all of that and he's gay. So it was his jam. It's like, hey, you be the best man. You be in charge of whatever you want. I want to be in charge of the fashion. Okay.
I mean, what, like, just Googling wedding dresses, I don't think it's that weird. Now, if she would have gone to the store and tried them on,
that's a different level.
Probably would have been like, oh, that's weird. But just Googling them, I don't.
Hey, so how similar is it? Okay, you know that movie, what was it? The one with, where like, they're trying, not Anne Hathaway, the one where they're trying on wedding dresses. And like they have like a diarrhea incident because of like food poisoning. What movie is that?
Oh, yes. Something about the Bachelorette?
Bachelorette party, something. What movie is that, Mom?
Yes.
Whenever you talk about trying on wedding, somebody in the comments I know was going to correct me. They do it all the time.
Yes. It has a couple of comedians in it.
Yeah.
Megan, are you okay?
Oh. I think my dress was probably just tight.
Oh, my God. You got food poisoning from that restaurant, didn't you?
No, I had the same thing that she had, and I hope you're fine.
Oh, my. Okay.
Oh, no.
Why is this happening?
Nothing's happening. Oh, my God. You know, I don't really care which dress we get. It doesn't matter to me. I just need to get off this white carpet.
No, okay. Oh, no, not the bathroom. Oh, everybody, go.
friends in it.
Oh, yeah. It was one of the most hilarious scenes ever. Yeah. They're trying on wedding dresses, and, like, she's all jealous of, like, the maid of honor mm-hmm. because she wants to take them to France in, like, this like, $3,000 wedding dress from this Italian designer. It's like, oh, you look so beautiful, but no, I want to try on this other one. It's like a couple $100, and look, it's, like, all, like, loose and fitting. You could dance in it. You could spread your legs in it, and you're like, oh, no, but I just think. And then she gave everybody food poisoning.
Yes. Yes.
It's not my big fat Greek wedding. It's not that one.
I can remember.
Somebody will correct me. Dominic will correct me. He's going to put in a clip. It's one of my favorite scenes of all time. I watch it all the time on YouTube when I just need a laugh. I don't know. When I think of trying on wedding dresses, I remember trying on tuxedos. I hated it. I was like, oh, look, it fits. Let's go.
That's every man probably.
And then Chris is like, oh no, but what about the shade of navy?
Oh, I remember that. That was a fun day. The three of us.
For you together. All. Exactly. It was fun, like, once we got out of the trying on clothes aspect of it.
Okay, let's go eat and drink now.
Okay, so let us take a look at the timeline. August 4th of 2018. Nicole is shopping for wedding dresses online. She's pricing them. It's not just like conceptually, oh, what will my wedding dress look like? No, she's shopping them. The price information, all of this stuff. Just weeks after they started talking, so her cell phone data shows that she was looking at wedding dresses, not just like a haphazard search, for hours. She had it in her mind that Christopher Watts was a viable candidate for marriage. That's how I interpret that. August 9th, 5 days later, Shanann leaves on a business trip to Arizona. And this is the heartbreaking part of it for me, because, like, I read Shanann's text messages, and, like, I swear to God, I want to, like, hug my wife. Because if my wife was ever feeling what Shanann was feeling, I would want to fix it. But that's protector man portion of me. Shanann is going through all of this, and she's like begging her best friend for advice. How do I fix this? I feel like our marriage is falling apart.
But, excuse me, but also Chris was no longer in love with Shanann.
Well,
no longer loved her.
100% he wasn't.
Your feeling comes from a man who's in love with his wife. Mm-hmm. He had no feelings for her.
And that's true. That's 100% true. And that's, he confessed to murdering his family. It led him to that. He was 100% on the outs. And when a man is out, they're out. Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't speak for all men, but I can speak for me. Anytime that I've ever been out on a relationship, I was all the way out.
Right.
All the way. And I don't think that that's exclusive to men. I feel like that's with women as well. Yeah. And I don't want to even speculate about how long it takes a man to get there before it takes a woman to get there. I have no idea about. I just know that when a man is out and they are fixated on this other thing, they're going to go gravitate toward this other thing. And he had gotten to that place with Nicole. So she's texting. She's confiding to friends about her troubles with Chris. She texts a friend that she and Chris had their best talk yet. I can't even imagine what Chris would have. My functional knowledge and understanding of Chris Watts as a man is that of a bumbling idiot. I cannot picture in my own mind, and maybe you girls could help me understand, how a guy like Christopher Watts could gain the attention of a person like Shanann or Nicole Kessinger on the strength of what he has to say. Because what he had to say, I have lots of theories about it, but one of them is that he was not like the leader. He was not a guy that was going to lead anybody out of a tornado, out of a hurricane. But I feel like certain types of women, such as Shanann, who was a strong-minded, goal-oriented go-getter, she attached herself to Christopher Watts, and it feels like they were so unequally yoked. Like, I feel like Shanann deserved somebody that at the very least had the same ambitions as her, so they could really be the power couple that she wanted to be. But Christopher Watts was just this guy that worked at an oil field. He's making about 50 grand a year. What was his motivation to make anything extra? Nothing, because he was complaining about how, like, oh, I make all this money, but we could not have to spend all of this. We could just, like, spend less and save more. Fine. But, like, in those statements, there's not really motivation to excel, to succeed, or, like, gain extra, whatever. He was set in, like, his salary and whatever. Shanann was trying to elevate themselves and whatever. It didn't work out. Nicole Kessinger comes off to me as a person similar to Shanann.
Controlling
leader, and a person that is able to lead a specific type of man, mm-hmm. like Chris. I met many women like that in my life, in law school, in wherever, and it never worked out for them with me because I'm a different kind of man. But for a specific kind of man like Christopher Watts, who was like simple-minded, one-track minded, very easily manipulative, he's very naive in the way that he thinks, very juvenile in the way that he thinks, can be led by a woman such as these two. And he was. Because for whatever you think about Shanann, his type 100% was ambitious, female, leader, strong, all of those qualities. He was attracted to that in Shanann, and was attracted to that in Nicole. There was parallels in my observations of that to me between the two of them. Nicole was just the new thing. She was the shiny, bright new object. Mm-hmm. And Christopher Watts being this chubby kid from birth, you know, that all of a sudden he's in shape and he's attracting all this attention from people who he's never had attention from before, had no idea how to deal with it. And again, I'm getting into the male aspect of it. I'm not interested in entertaining that on this show. So let me continue. So on August 9th, Shanann, she leaves on this business trip to Arizona. She's confiding in friends about how they had this great talk. She had this great talk with Chris about their relationship. And if you read the text messages, it's nothing spectacular. All he did was show like a vague, cursory interest in preserving the marriage. It's all it took. It's like I'm sort of in, and then Shanann was all in, which is heartbreaking to me to process. But that was the scenario. And so, August 11th, Chris had hired a babysitter. He went out with Kessinger while Shanann is away. He gets a babysitter, says that they're going to go to a baseball game at Colesburg. Co-workers, but he's at the bar with Kessinger. August 13th is when Shanann returns from her business trip, around 2 a.m. in the morning. Nicole Atkinson gives Shanann a ride to her home on the 2800 block of Saratoga Trail. And after she returns from the business trip, that's when everything happens. August 13th, 2018 is when Chris kills Shanann and their daughters, according to his confession. Whether or not you want to believe that Shanann is responsible for the murders, let me just spoil this for you. There is no direct evidence that is going to point to Shanann committing the murders. So if you want to believe that, you are 100% outside of what is factually known. So if you want to speculate that and that's your opinion, that's fine. Just know that it is not rooted in what is the actual evidence of what is known on the case. There was actually some person that was quoting or commenting on our show the last week that we did, our last show, suggesting that Shanann was involved in the murders. And then she felt the need to say, I am not Chris Watts' mom or something like that. Which I never asked her, but yes. I assume that she probably has gotten that a lot on other shows that she's commented on.
But isn't there like video of the little kids walking when he's apparently putting the body
on the surveillance? Okay, so I've seen it myself, and you guys we'll have a link down below to surveillance footage of the truck in the wee morning hours of August 13th. Mm-hmm. But it looks to me like there are shadows of little people, mm-hmm. And according to Christopher Watts's confession, yeah, he took him in the car and they were driving to dispose of mom's body. And in the process of doing that, before he exited the car, he snuffed the lights out. He snuffed the lives out of both of them with his hands. He took a blanket and put it over her head. Little Cece, in one hand over her throat, another hand over her mouth and her nose, and suffocated her while the four-year-old watched and then did the same to her and then placed them in this oil tank with an opening of like 8 inches wide, shoved their bodies down in there. And then you read the discovery of how they were discovered. They had to drain the crude oil from the tanks. And they could observe Cece was found laying face down in the bottom of the oil tanker, her face, head facing due west, her body facing due south. And they pulled her out of there. Her sister was in the other tanker, face up. And I cannot imagine having to be the officials that recovered the bodies of those little girls. I would have had to retire at that point. I could not have continued. The strength that those people have to have when conducting those investigations is unparalleled to any profession that I could think of. But that's what Christopher did.
I really don't understand why he had to kill the two girls. Like, he got rid already of the wife. That was what was in the middle of being with Nicole. Like, he would have been a single father.
I don't. You know, just like, write the check, buddy. You're going to be paying child support.
Well,
and do whatever you want after that. And
yeah. Just don't get it.
There is no logic to any of this. There's nothing that you're going to suggest is a logical ploy as to why anything that happened that happened. If he wanted to employ logic, he would be forced to come up with a scenario that he was possessed by a demon.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's it. If he wanted to understand evil and what it looks like and what it is. Alan Watts, who is in very much In very many ways, my father has opined of the necessity of evil, that it is only with the definition of evil that we could define good and subsequently God. Perhaps without evil, you can have no good, because it all kind of just blends in together. It's like Marco Pierre White, when he's cooking, he's like, you got to layer the flavors. You don't want everything to just amalgamate into just one big flavor. Everything's got to be layers. You got to be able to taste the basil and the Parmesan cheese and the egg whites and all this other stuff. Otherwise, it just becomes one big undefinitive flavor. Such is the case with good and evil. You need the layers to see where everybody stands.
I have a question, though. I know that Chris was saying on some recordings that he felt as though his body...
He said that.
...was taken over.
That I wasn't part... I wasn't in control and somebody else took over. Control. Yeah.
Now, wasn't that after he was already incarcerated for a certain period of time? Like, after he had...
That was in the FBI interview.
Right.
When he was already in prison, yeah.
I'm wondering if, after being in there, thinking, like, maybe if I say this, they'll think that, you know...
I suggested on the last show that I believe that he believes, he's convinced himself that he did not commit the murders. He tried to pin it on Nicole. He told his jail cellmate that Nicole is the one that actually killed the kids. I had opined that perhaps that's because he doesn't want to live with the fact that he did this to his girls. He first tried to pin it on Shanann. When he was confronted with what happened to those girls, he said, oh, Shanann did it. And then in retaliation, I avenged their death and murdered Shanann. That was his first story.
Right.
Before it was, no, it was all me. And then it was, oh, no, it was Nicole.
Right.
Here's the thing about Chris's story. It's difficult to believe anything that he says.
Correct.
The main problem that I have with him is that in spite of what you think might be the truth, I can never reconcile with myself his accounting of how he murdered Shanann, which was he was straddling her in the bed. They had sex. And then they were talking. It was brought up that he was having this affair with Nicole. He was straddling her, sitting on top of her, over her pregnant belly. And then at some point, he just choked the life out of her. And then they ask her, so was she fighting back? What was she doing? Like, what happened? It's like, oh no, she just laid there. And it looked like she might have been saying a prayer to herself. I was like, there's no effing chance in hell that somebody's having the life strangled out of them and they just lay there and accept it. There's no chance that there's not any defensive wounds, that she wasn't scratching or fighting back, unless he had her restrained in such a way, unless he choked her from the back where he was laying on top of her, her arms pinned down at her sides with his arm around her neck, or if she was perhaps like under the covers, like restrained by the covers where she couldn't fight back and he was choking her life out of her that way. But there was legitimately no defensive wounds on Christopher. So either we have to believe that Nicole just accepted, oh, okay, I'm going to be strangled right now. And I'm just, you know, prayers to everybody. Hope my girls are going to be okay. And just accepted it. The only way that makes sense is if she was restrained in some way. I'll tell you what, I don't believe that Chris would have needed Nicole's help in strangling her to death. It's not that difficult to restrain somebody, stripping them of movement of their limbs to do whatever you got to do. It's not that difficult given Chris's size and Shanann's size and their perceived strength or whatever. When I hear Chris say it, I genuinely believe that this was at his hands. I believe that he was the one that did this to his girls. Whether Nicole was involved in it, I don't think that she committed the murders. I just think she may have been involved in the planning. But let me continue before I get too far. It's been 1:47 already. We might have to split this into a couple of episodes. We'll worry about that later. Okay, so Shanann, this is his account. Shanann had told Chris, you're never going to see the girls again. This is what he said after the revelation of his affair with Nicole. So then he strangles her to death. Bella, the 4-year-old, comes in and asks, so what's wrong with mom? Chris had wrapped Shanann in a blanket and said, oh, she's just sick. And is in the wee early mornings of 4:30, 5 a.m., that he wraps her in a blanket, puts her in the back of her truck. He puts the two kids in the back seat and drives to the work site, his work site, the oil tankers. And then he smothers Celeste, the 3-year-old, in the back seat. And the way that he describes doing it, with his right arm across her throat, his left arm across her nose and her face. And that image, just me imagining it, will never escape me. How a human being could do that to a defenseless child like that, I could never understand it. And then we try to rationalize it. What is this? Is it evil personified? If you wanted a definition, just look at this case. Yeah. Look at it. That's what it is. It's utter disregard for the brightness in those little girls' eyes, the life that they had inside of them. It is utter disregard for anything other than an objective to make human beings look terrifying, disgusting, And what more disgusting image of humanity could you have other than that? But I digress. Let's talk about the phone involvement. Nicole was on the phone with Chris in the early morning hours of August 14th of 2018 and was suspected of listening into the conversation between Chris and the detectives. How did it all come about? Let's talk about it. So there's this whole conversation that takes place about the wedding ring. So after the murders had been committed, Nicole talks about the wedding ring, about this discussion that was taking place. And Chris said, well, what do I do with the wedding ring? And then Nicole talks about, I was so put off by what he said. It's like, oh, maybe you should just pawn it or whatever. And she suggests Christopher wants to pawn Shanann's wedding ring. And then she says that Christopher said, I don't know, it's a really nice rock. I think it's worth a significantly more, whatever. They had this whole conversation. Nicole says to pawn it. This is the night after the murders had taken place. Nicole Kessinger was informed. Nicole caught wind that the FBI was aware of the affair. Significant, because when she's talking to the FBI interrogators at first, it's like, oh, I didn't know all this stuff. And then, you know, she behaves accordingly. She's trying to hide it. But her job contacted the FBI and let them in on, hey, these two have had a relationship since at least June. So Nicole's workplace supervisor had informed CBI agent Tammy Lee about the affair on August 15th. August 15th is like a day after the murders. Mm-hmm. Nicole was tipped off about that, which is why she took the initiative to contact the police. She wanted to marshal the evidence, right? Because she knew the affair was going to be exposed. Nicole had searched prior to meeting with the police about how text messages were traced, about how long phone companies kept deleted phone messages, basically about how to cover up text messages that you wanted to delete. She had done all of those searches, and the cops were fully informed about it. And when she was confronted by the FBI about turning over her cell phone, I was like, I don't know. I just feel like this whole situation is going to be crazy whether or not you guys have my phone. She gives some kind of throwaway line, and then her dad's like, well, if you give them your phone, then it will just back up what you're saying, which leads me to believe that, well, dad didn't know about the deleted searches and text messages. So the cops can trace text messages. Long story short about that, and I'm not going to get into the specifics. I'm not the guy to talk about that, but they can. Whatever you delete, they're going to find that. So she's doing searches about how long phone companies keep text messages. The question, I guess, is if you have anything, I asked you guys this question earlier. If you have nothing to hide, then why wouldn't you just tell them everything? Screw the affair. This guy just murdered his, like, two kids and three children and a wife. I mean, whatever's coming out the bag is already out. And plus, you probably know by what you guys have contextually talked about that you may be involved as a suspect in this case, giving you ample initiative, incentive to be forthcoming with the police. Hey, I had nothing to do with this. This is everything I have. That effing guy, this was all his idea. She wasn't like that. She was hiding stuff. And so, all right. Let's talk about the 111-minute phone call between Nicole and Chris. So she's asked about it. She can't remember what they had talked about. She was talking about FaceTiming. This was hours before the murders. So remember, they go to this date with the lazy dog the day before the murders. And then the early morning hours, Shanann comes back home. He doesn't even hide it. He pays on the joint statement or whatever. They had this conversation about it. But this is hours before the murders occurred. They had this 111-minute phone call. She tells the cops, I can't remember what we had talked about. And she says that it's not anything significant to me that we had talked about. I don't remember the conversation that we just had. And then she says that it's just so long ago, I don't remember what we could possibly... It was a lot of stupid little things. But this literally... conversation had occurred like days ago. You know, I could remember 111 conversations that I had from 15 years ago. If it was that long, I remember what we talked about. You know,
if you don't have that many long conversations,
that's true. Because maybe once or twice, maybe zero.
I've been known to talk to one of my best friends for 2 to 3 hours at a time, like at least.
That is excessive. Well, I got stuff to do, lady.
So I'm not gonna remember. I probably remember the last conversation, maybe the one previous to that, but not every single one.
Yeah, it's difficult, and so. What are they talking about? That conversation was probably really important that they had. 111 minutes. It was important enough that Nicole didn't want to clue the cops into what was said.
Yeah.
What are you talking about for 111 minutes? I don't talk to anybody for 111 minutes. My phone calls between myself and my wife are like seconds long. Hey, what time are you going to be home? Like in 12 minutes. Okay, bye. I don't want to talk to anybody on the phone for that long, honestly. But they were probably discussing, probably, maybe, what was about to occur. The disposing of the bodies. What we were going to say to the cops when inevitably they come knocking. Is it possible? Now, I don't know that that was the conversation. That's the speculation. What else were they talking about? How often did they have these 111-minute conversations? That was significant because it stood out because of the length of time. All of their other conversations were not that long, right? So Nicole Kessinger talks about her discomfort at the Watts house. She mentioned visiting the house twice. In a very short period, she says she felt uncomfortable, not wanting to stay long, which is probably true for all the reasons that I suggested. It's like, oh, look, he has like this whole wife and children and he's happy with them. And maybe she was feeling like the mistress. I got to imagine being the mistress kind of sucks. Like you're the plan B. Like you're the discardable. Like Shanann had all of the equity, the house, the kids with another one on the way. And you're just like the distraction. I'd imagine is how she probably felt. Which is why she's probably trying to manipulate dumbass Chris into like, you need to choose me over the family. Otherwise, I'm cutting all this off.
She's trying to validate herself.
Yeah, 100%. Mm-hmm. Which could have been not an innocent intention, but it could have been a non-murderous intention. 100% it could have been. Mm-hmm. But it also could have formed or strengthened Christopher Watts' murder or motive to do what he did. Is my theory. So she talks about that. There's inconsistent statements about how she visited the house, about her feelings about it. She claims to have visited only once, but she later admitted that it was twice. She corrected herself after doing the initial interview. She had provided conflicting dates for her visits, raising doubts about her credibility. Here's the bombshell key to all of this. All right, because right now it's all been conjecture. You know, what does a mistress do in this situation? Let's talk about her alibi. Where was she on the night of the murders? Where was she immediately after the murders? What about all of that? Well, there is a significant gap in the discovery. In her phone activity on the morning of the murders, suggesting that she might have been involved. So if you the further analysis of her phone records is this. Over a month after the murders showed zero activity near the crime scene, Frederickville, Colorado, or something like that. I forget the exact name. There's this one ping at 6:15 a.m., the day that the murders occurred, where she was present. There is surveillance in Dominic link to this image, but there is an image of Nicole Kessinger, what appears to be the outline of her standing in front of the Watts home from their neighbor's surveillance camera. It's not clear. You're not going to see her face. You're not going to see any definable characteristics of Nicole Kessinger. But what you will see is the outline of what appears to be a woman. It appears to be a head with long hair. There appears to be breasts. It appears to be the curvature of a woman. She may or may not be carrying a small child. as she stands there in the driveway, and it appears that she may have the outline of a purse. If you juxtapose the purse that she was wearing, that if she is indeed the one that's in that surveillance footage, mm-hmm. it is the exact same shape of the purse that she was wearing, that she took with her to the interrogation mm-hmm. with the FBI. I don't know how many different shapes of purses there are. I'm not the guy to comment on that. I imagine the purse is like squares. Is there any other shapes?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Many, I don't want to know. I'm just going to say that in the surveillance, it appears to be the same shape of purse as what she had when she went to the interrogation office with the FBI. That's all. That's all. It appears to be her in the surveillance. It appears to be...
At 6 a.m.?
6:15. At 6:15. After Chris would have already left. Chris was already gone and away, if that's true. He left the house around 5 a.m. that morning. And that's definitive. These are facts. These are facts. So whether or not that was actually Nicole Kessinger, I don't know. Was she carrying a child or not? That wouldn't make sense because Chris already had left the house. I don't know. But, and I'd imagine these are some of the same conversations that the FBI would have had with themselves. There's no chance that they weren't aware of the silhouette of a woman that may have resembled Nicole Kessinger. There's no chance that they hadn't gone through and processed that video footage to the 18th. There's no chance. So they knew all of this was in existence. Now, where this has been resurrected is in like the true crime sleuths. They go in and examine all of this discovery and say, oh, wait a minute, what about who? I think I see the outline of what might be a body in the truck of Chris's truck. I don't know any of that. There's like these fuzzy images. And Dominic is going to link to all of them. And perhaps there will be a cutout of some of the images. There's a very infamous video. It's like 21 minutes long that suggests that, hey, that might be Nicole. Hey, that might be the outline of Shanann Watts' body laying in a sheet in the back of Christopher Watts' truck. That might be a thing. It might. Or it might be nothing. I don't know. I just know that there's no chance the FBI didn't know of that footage. And they have never pursued Nicole Kessinger beyond the interrogations that we all know about. Never. But the phone ping at the Christopher Watts home is significant. Now, you might want to talk about, okay, what about like a cell phone radius and all that? Well, let's get into that. Coverage radius issues. The problem with that is, and this has been an issue with the Idaho case, Brian Koberger, because part of the probable cause affidavit was like, well, his cell phone pinged at the location of where the house would have been, all this, fine. But it also might have pinged where he resided, like 13 minutes away. Well, Nicole Kessinger lived about 25 minutes away from the Watts home, if you're driving. And when she was home, when she was verifiably at home, her cell phone always pinged at the cell phone tower next to her house. The only time ever pinged at Christopher Watts' home was, according to the discovery, at 6:15 the morning of the murders, which is exceedingly odd. If you are a detective looking at possible suspects for a murder that hasn't been solved.
Could she have been just a little bit psycho, and because she knew that the wife was probably returning the day before that, she just wanted to drive by?
Sure. I've had some psycho girlfriends before. Yeah. That's a thing. That's a thing that happens. Could she have been stalking Chris? Maybe.
Yeah.
But coinciding with the date of the murders? I don't know.
Or maybe Chris may have called Nicole saying, I just killed Shanann.
Let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that. Okay. So, before we get there, so the cell phone pings. It had never pinged there ever again. She had never been pinged at the cell phone tower where the Christopher Watts residence was ever again after that date. Talk about coverage radius issues, whatever. There was no phone calls that day until about 2:26 p.m. that afternoon when she was at work. Who did she call? Her normal phone activity, which is, I assume, the normal activity of anybody in 24, is she was on her phone making phone calls, at least one phone call per hour, every hour, you know, checking text messages, checking whatever. Her phone activity was silent from the early morning hours of 6:15 a.m. from that cell phone ping until about 2:26. What does that mean? Well, if somebody wanted to avoid the accusation of their involvement because their cell phone was active at that time, they might just leave it at their house or just turn it off when they wouldn't normally, such as the Murdaugh case. Mm-hmm. Remember that case?
Yes.
That was a big thing. It's like, why does all of a sudden your cell phone just going inactive? That's not like you. You're like an attorney. You get like text messages every 10 minutes. So evidence of possibly trying to manipulate the cell phone to not pick up where she was at the time to suggest that she was involved in the participation of the murders, perhaps. But she made a couple of phone calls. One of the phone calls was to her spiritual advisor that was known for sex magic practices. What does this mean? Maybe nothing. Maybe nothing. But let's talk about it. She placed a phone call to a 73-year-old gentleman named Robert of the Ordo Templi Ordinance that was a sex cult known for sex magic that had a membership based on initiation practices, which is like, think of gang initiations. You want to be in this gang, you got to do this drive-by shooting. That was all the rage back in the early 90s. So some have opined that perhaps her membership into the sex cult was the sacrifice of Shanann. I don't subscribe to that. There's no evidence to suggest that. But there is this caveat to this whole thing about she was in contact right after the murders to this weird-ass guy that was a leader in this sex cult that had a membership based on initiations. Describe the initiations for me. I can't. Think of Eyes Wide Shut, that movie with Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman. Mom, you watched that movie on your own. I don't need to talk about that movie. So later on that day, she goes and meets with this guy named Jim at her apartment. At 5:01 p.m., this is the day that the police have made contact with Christopher and they're investigating the disappearance of Shanann and the children. So at 5:01 p.m. that day, Nicole calls Chris twice and then she deletes the calls. At 5:30, Chris called her and then she deleted the call from her call log. Later on that night, at 11:09 p.m., the night of the murders, there was a 51-minute phone call between her and Chris. She deleted it immediately afterwards. At 12:09 a.m., the following day, Chris called her back and they spoke for like 31 minutes. What are they talking about? Are they trying to talk about what the cops said, what the detectives are saying, or like what's being said, whatever? I don't know. But at 1:12 a.m., Nicole had called Chris again. She called him to talk for about 3 minutes. At 1:51 a.m., Chris calls Nicole. They have another conversation for about 8 minutes. And then at 1:58 a.m., Chris and the detective, they start playing phone tag. And it's like, hey, let's have a phone call. And then every time he would call the cops or the cops would call him, his personal phone would have like dead air on it. Like, what's with this dead air? I don't understand. And then this would repeat for a while until Chris said, you know what? Screw it. He ended up calling the detective back on his work phone. And then in the time of that, they talked for about a minute later after the detective initiated contact. He calls the detective back from his work phone, not his personal phone, where they were trying to communicate. And at this exact same time that he's having that conversation with the detective, Nicole called Chris's phone, his personal phone. And that call lasted for about 11 minutes. And so what the speculation is, which is pretty obvious to me, is that he was trying to connect like a three-way call. And it wasn't working out for whatever reason. And so he says, screw it, I'm going to call you my work phone. And then Nicole calls back his personal phone. He puts it on speaker so that she could hear what's going on for 11 minutes, his conversation with the detectives. Mm. Why? Yeah. Why? They're trying to get their story straight. They're trying to get things together. I don't know. But extremely fishy. Mm-hmm. So, Nicole, of course, deleted all that incriminating evidence, the suspicious searches from her phone, and then she tried to destroy her SIM card. Why would you do that? Why? I've never in my life tried to destroy a SIM card. But in what scenario would you try to do that? Like take active steps to destroy a SIM card, like, I don't know, drop it in battery acid or something.
You're guilty.
Yeah.
Because you're trying to hide something. Hiding something. That might strip you of your freedom.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that was the direction in her Google search. When she was protecting herself.
Well, she had, and we'll talk about that. She had researched Amber Fry. Remember Amber Fry? That was the mistress of Chris Peterson.
Mm, yes.
Yeah. Back in 2003, those murders.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what happened to her? Like, what do people think of her? And that she had made that Google search. So this shit gets deeper. Let's talk about the OxyContin. Okay. So Chris had told detectives that he initially tried to subdue Shanann with OxyContin. And then he says, because they had never established, well, how'd you come in contact with this narcotic? And he says, well, that is a secret that I'm going to take with me to my grave, whatever piece of shit that he is. And someone said, well, obviously he was trying to protect Nicole. Well, here's what the detective knows. It's not, he wasn't protecting anybody. The FBI already knew this. It's in the discovery. Nicole was on the phone with Chris and a clinic. And Chris, again, shown in the call logs. And it shows that she was inquiring specifically about how much OxyContin was safe to take, just a regular dose, and how much would cause a miscarriage. Now, why is that significant? While Shanann was in North Carolina, Chris probably tried to poison her or induce a miscarriage with Oxy while they're on that family trek with OxyContin, because Shanann, in her text messages to her friends, grew very ill one day, complaining about severe cramps, and she recovered, suggesting that perhaps she was poisoned with OxyContin and she didn't know about it. She got really sick, but then she recovered, and what was that all about? And then on August 7th of 18, Shanann is text messaging friends that she thinks that Chris changed his mind about wanting to have a baby. And then she talks about wanting to cancel the gender reveal thing, you know, because Chris is not showing any interest whatsoever in this pregnancy at all. And you know, heartbreaking for her to just read the text messages about her emotional state of what she was going on, just asking for the bare minimum from Chris and just getting, well, she was getting poisoned in the midst of all of that. It reminds me of that 2008 case from Utah about this little lady. I don't want to get sidetracked, but it's not like he's the first person to think of this, no. You know? Mm-hmm. So August 12th, 2023, we talk about the lazy dog date where he doesn't even try to hide the purchase. The next day, Shanann is murdered. Shanann had saw the bill. She knew what the score was at that point. At that point, at some point prior to her being murdered, they had a conversation, I no doubt believe, about there was another woman involved. So, Nicole's inconsistent statements, the red flags that were raised about her. Why? Because she had trouble remembering specifics about dates and conversations about Chris Watts. What did you guys talk about in the 111-minute phone call? What were you guys talking about the day of the murders? And she was talking about, like, it was suggested that, like, he had made some kind of offhanded statement about his perhaps participation in the murders of his family. And if I thought that he was doing that, I was going to cut off all communication, so I never texted him again. But she was, like, listening in on the phone call between her and the detectives. Mm-hmm. And so, what is it about? Let's sidetrack from that for a minute. Let's talk about the way that Nicole had described the financial situation between Christopher Watts and Shanann with the detectives. She claimed to have this casual relationship where, oh, I wasn't this big deal. We're just kind of screwing around, whatever. And if I knew Shanann was pregnant, I would have cut it off. Fine. But she had an intimate knowledge about their finances. She knew, for example, that the Wattses had filed for bankruptcy back in 2015. she had basically, if you were to replace Nicole with Christopher, as he described what was being described with their finances, it was like, oh, we make all this money and then Shanann spends it all. So basically saying that, you know, Shanann is all about her appearances and she wants to spend to pretend like we're rich, but we're really not. We're struggling. And they were having these financial issues. But then Nicole gets to the interrogators and she talks about Chris's frustrations about living paycheck to paycheck and Shanann's spending habits as if she's speaking for Chris, which leads me to believe that she was intimately involved with whatever was going on in their marriage and all the reasons why it was falling apart. And again, she mentioned, you know, the bankruptcy and stuff. But aside from that, she had specifically mentioned the materialistic lifestyle of Shanann and how I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't move into a house that was like twice what I could afford. That is the shenanigans. Who would do such a thing? Basically speaking negatively about Shanann and, you know, all of these things. So, and she talks about the image that Shanann wanted to portray, that Chris was kind of trapped in, that he couldn't sustain on their combined $100,000 income back in 2018. And that house, I mean, granted, it was beautiful, but I am a big believer, as I talked about in the last show, of, hey, you fake it until you make it. And then, you know, you buy stuff with the hopes and the expectations that you're going to earn enough and be able to succeed and eventually earn more. And she was not a paycheck to paycheck person. She's working in this MLM. Whatever you think about them, I know people that have been successful in it. Not very well, I don't know anybody that's been successful in it, but I know of those scenarios. You know, people, hey mom, remember Mona V?
I do.
And freaking Beachbody? Mm-hmm. And you guys all try to say, hey, no, sign up for Beachbody. We're gonna be rich in like 5 years. It's like, get the F out of here. They're stupid ass workout.
I do like their videos though. The videos are good. Yes.
But they had this MLM structure I know that my mom was a part of, along with my uncle, and they're like trying to sell me on the virtues of the Mona V. Was it like wine or something? And then it comes out a couple years later, oh no, it was a big scam, obviously. But and I don't know if Shanann Watson was involved in like a scamish MLM, but she was making money clearly from it. People said that, oh, she had like $20,000 worth of product. That's not in the discovery. That's been speculation. She had all this product from this MLM, and she was like buying the stuff to like maintain, I guess, her car. Mm-hmm. I don't know anything of that. If that's out there, it is out there. That is one of the theories. I have no direct evidence to point to that. But she also might have been successfully selling it off and making money from it. She was earning at least $50,000 a year from that. And Chris was making about 50, they're making about six figures. Mm-hmm. But they're having to afford their lifestyle in their house. And it was a really nice house. And back then in 2018, I bought my house, my wife, in about that time. And since that time, it's appreciated like approaching seven figures. I mean, it's not that much now, but like back then it was certainly not that much. But yeah, the appreciation of all, which is why I say, oh, you just could have stuck it out. You would have all this equity in the house. Then you could have like bought, I'm not a financial advisor. But I'm just saying that there was an end game to what Shanann was plotting. And she was very optimistic and ambitious. And Christopher was very much, you know, not that way, blue collar type. Couldn't see the forest from the trees in that regard, whatever. But Nicole Kessinger seemed to be very clued in and intuitive about Christopher Watts' feelings about the financial habits of the two. And she expounded in great detail to law enforcement about such. And so, suspicious by itself. So that is, in essence, the factual evidence that seemingly implicates Nicole Kessinger in her involvement. So before I share my opinions, I invite both of you who have pretty much said, I don't know, I think it was Chris at the beginning of it, you didn't have an opinion one way or the other about whether or not Nicole was responsible for it. But what say you now, as we've been talking for about 2 hours about this stuff?
I'm still not convinced that she had like participation in actually murdering the wife or the kids, but I think she knew some of the things that were happening, and maybe she motivated him to get to do what he did.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not completely convinced that she actually
was involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think, Mom?
I don't feel that she was involved in the actual murder. I feel that she may have been involved in plotting along with Chris the murder, because when Shanann came home and that last night that they spent together and they had sex, and then right after they discussed, you know, his extracurricular activities, mm-hmm. it was all planned out, and that's what I feel. I don't think the kids were, the murders of the kids were actually planned out, but Shanann, I feel, was, and then it kind of unfolded. And maybe Nicole showed up at the house after he left, so she would, I think maybe she knew about everything all the way through.
Well, if I put on my prosecutor's hat and I'm trying to figure out who's responsible, I got a full-blown confession from Christopher Watts that makes sense. And there's not any physical evidence that really points to anybody other than Chris. And honestly, the physical evidence really doesn't even point to Chris because, you know, I mean, he confessed. Had he not confessed, I mean, you would have had three dead bodies that they had recovered, and they would have opined that he was responsible circumstantially. But there's nothing like they had DNA evidence, or like they didn't even have defensive wounds, which I don't believe Chris's account of his confession where he says that Nicole just laid there while he strangled her. That makes no sense on any level. If you strangle a three-year-old, they're going to defend themselves.
Yeah, if you strangle somebody that wants to die, they're going to actively try and
protect themselves.
Protect themselves. That's natural.
You're going to instinctively raise for your neck. Mm-hmm. And if you can't get to your neck, you're going to scratch at whatever's... Mm-hmm. I was a wrestler. And that's mm-hmm. kind of what happens when you're getting choked out. And you can't get your arm through, like, you do whatever you can to try to, you just want to breathe. It's like this, this very animalistic instinct. You protect your throat. No chance that she didn't defend herself. No chance that she didn't fight back.
As a mother, I mean, her thoughts of, like, you're killing me, and, like, immediately
protect your children.
I need to protect myself, my kids. I can't leave my, mm-hmm. my children motherless.
And we know that Shanann was very defensive-minded with her children. Mm-hmm. Going back to the whole pistachio ice cream thing, mm-hmm. where her children had this nut allergy.
Right.
Christopher Watts' mom had served them pistachio ice cream that could have potentially killed the children.
Yeah.
And then Shanann was like not letting it go. Like, no, I'm not going to just sweep this under the rug. You put my children in danger. Right. I'm going to stand up for my kids. She was not the person that was just going to lay down and sacrifice herself so that he could be with his mistress. There's no chance that happened. So I don't believe.
Do you think there's a possibility that he may have drugged her?
Yeah, I do. It's possible, although I haven't seen a toxicology result to confirm that she was probably subdued by way of narcotic. But that test, that toxicology test that would have confirmed it, does not exist. So then the question begs, why didn't they pursue that? Well, because Chris already kind of confessed to it. They kind of shut down everything. It cost a lot of money to research those mm-hmm. things. And so once they had that, they stopped everything. But then as a DA, okay, what about the search history from 2017, 2018? Way back when. What about her inconsistencies in her story? It's talking about this some casual relationship, but she's looking at wedding dresses and all this kind of stuff. What about how she is claiming that she didn't know about the pregnancy, but she's stalking the Facebook page? And what about that cell phone ping from 6:15 a.m.? and the prospective surveillance footage that seemingly shows the outline of Nicole. And there, that has not been corroborated, but it is out there. And there is certainly a picture of an outline of a woman that resembles Nicole that exists out there. And there will be a link, perhaps a flash to the screen from Dominic, of that image. All I'm saying is, if it was at 6:15 a.m., Chris was already gone. And so that doesn't hold a lot of weight. I think the FBI connecting the dots probably had suspicion of Nicole's conspiratorial tendencies towards plotting a murder, but they had zero in the realm of physical evidence supporting that she was involved. And insofar as they believed Christopher Watt's confession, they shut it down. Perhaps her dad's affiliation with law enforcement had some influence in that. Maybe it didn't. Maybe it didn't. I don't know. What could it have hurt to have charged her with second-degree murder or conspiracy to commit murder or felony murder in the state of California for the sake of, well, if the jury thinks she's innocent, then let them think that. Because I've known some really good DAs that said, hey, well, maybe she is innocent, but let a jury decide, you know, where there is actual evidence such as that. It just wasn't enough to sway them. And that, I think, is people's frustration in the case. We didn't have the opportunity to examine these very real questions that we have. But I will caution people in a saying that, hey, there is dozens of ways to interpret any individual piece of evidence. Just because you have a cell phone search from 2017 doesn't mean that she was in a relationship and plotting a murder of Christopher Watts. Just because you have a singular cell phone ping from 6:15 doesn't physically implicate her in the murders of the girls. It may suggest knowledge that the girls were disappeared. It may have been, hey, this traumatic thing just happened. I need you to go to the house to check on something. Or maybe they had some kind of wayward conversation. I don't know. I don't know what's going on. But there's multiple ways to describe what had happened. If you ask me, if I was the district attorney in charge of this case, would I have filed charges? It really depends. Because if there was any political pushback whatsoever, I think I would have probably just left it alone because it wasn't going to go anywhere. And it put the victims' families through a trial where somebody was acquitted when they are all in unison in belief that Christopher Watts was the sole person responsible for the murders, then I think probably just leave it alone. That's probably the thinking of the DA. And that's why Nicole Kessinger, although she conceivably could have been charged with second degree murder or felony murder or conspiracy to commit murder, was left alone. That's my take on it. What say you guys?
Yeah, it seems possible. I mean, yeah. It's they already have somebody that confessed. Why go, I guess, fishing to see if somebody else was involved? Like,
yeah.
And didn't you say her? I mean, you did say her father had some relations with
Law enforcement.
I think sometimes it's, you know, who you know that may have put a stop to it.
Dominic, insert here the clip of Nicole Kesslinger's evil cackling like the Snow White like the Snow White Wicked Witch. You know, she should count her lucky stars and her good fortune. There's no guarantee that absent some additional evidence that charges won't be brought up against her. That may be forthcoming, but it's going to take something more than what we have. What we have is a purely circumstantial case where reasonable doubt is rife. Any criminal defense attorney worth his salt is going to win this case. If you put Nicole Kessinger on trial, she's going to be acquitted because there's reasonable doubt abound. Because not everybody that is a mistress behaves rationally. Not everybody that's confronted with the prospect of being exposed behaves rationally. And I submit to you two that you guys have offered real opinions about how you would behave in such a scenario. But until you're actually in the scenario and feeling that pressure from law enforcement and from everybody else, you have no idea how you're going to react. Like Mike Tyson says, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. And there's not really many more truer statements than I could think of than that. Because it sucks. It hurts. And then you see stars and it's like your face goes numb. It's like, what was that about? I don't want that to happen again. And then your behavior changes. Start bobbing and weaving your head and footwork and all of that. Never mind. So for all of you that have tuned in to listen to the evidence against Nicole Kessinger, thank you so much for listening. If you're new to this channel, welcome. And I encourage you to join the family and hit the subscribe button, because you're going to want to tune in for, we got a lot of big plans coming up for these next coming shows. But for our hardcore fans and for those that are interested, we do a segment called Family Law After Dark, where myself and Ileana offer our family law advice on real life situations that have been proposed to us or in the general public. And if, indeed, if you have a situation like this that you want us to evaluate, then you're going to want to DM me in our TikTok, which Dominic will flash on the screen right now. But until then, I think it is time to bring in some purple haze.